For months, former President Donald Trump has been distancing himself from Project 2025, a plan of conservative policy proposals written by the Heritage Foundation for a future Republican administration. But it recently came to light that Senator J.D. Vance, Trump's running mate, has written a foreword to a new book by Heritage Foundation President Kevin Roberts. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Could Senator Vance's foreword and other revelations in the news complicate the Trump campaign's messaging? Joining me now to discuss that and what impact Project 2025 could have on the presidential race are Xavier University Professor of Political Science, Mac Mariani. Thanks for being here, Mac.
Thanks for having me.
And Miami University Assistant Professor of Political Science, Ann Whitesell. Welcome back, Ann.
Thanks, Lucy.
Miami University is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. And Project 2025 has been called kind of a blueprint for a second Trump administration. Briefly describe what it is and some of the major policy changes it calls for. I know it's 900 pages long, so it's a lot to ask you to describe it briefly.
Right. So the 900 pages is called their mandate for leadership. It's kind of their policy agenda. The basic idea here is that, you know, in the initial Trump administration, they were limited by the fact that there wasn't a lot of experience in those who were holding office in the bureaucracy and in the upper echelons of the Trump administration. So they've kind of laid out all of the things that a conservative president should do. They're modeling this after what the Heritage Foundation did for Reagan back in 1980. And so it's really, it goes through every department in the federal government and kind of provides action items for what the conservative vision would be.
And former President Trump has been distancing himself from Project 2025.
He's involved in Project, and then they read some of the things, and they are extreme. I mean, they're seriously extreme. But I don't know anything about it. I don't want to know anything about it.
Mac, how has he been doing that? Obviously, we heard from him, but what are some of the things that the former president's been doing to kind of create that distance?
Well, I think that this one of the challenges, right, is that in every presidential election, certainly in many other types of elections, like the goal for the candidate typically at the general election stage is to try to be moderate, to try to appeal to the most people. And at the same time, there's this tension between that and also making sure your base shows up. So you're trying to kind of do both things at once, right? You're trying to send signals to your base that you're their guy and you're also, or girl, and that you are at the same time broadly acceptable to the American people. Meanwhile, the opposition is trying to frame you as extreme, as somebody who is outside of the mainstream and somebody's going to pursue an agenda that people won't like. To some extent, I think that this is really good politics on the part of the Democrats, right? Because, Heritage has been doing this since 1980. They've been doing this every 4 years since 1980. I think in 2017, it was called the Blueprint for Reform. And they kind of package it up and they make it look nice. And certainly other think tanks do this as well, both think tanks on the right, like American Enterprise Institute, as well as think tanks on the left, Center for American Progress, Third Way, Progressive Policy Institute. They're all pushing out these ideas. And what's good politics about this is that the Democrats have picked out the more extreme pieces of this, and they've tried to tie it to Trump as much as possible. And the way they've been able to do that is in part through this Kevin Roberts connection, right? Because Kevin Roberts is the new, relatively new head of Heritage, and he's connected with J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance wrote the foreword to his book. Now, does that mean that J.D. Vance endorses all of the things on the in the Heritage agenda? Probably not, right? But it's good politics. And the particularly good politics here is that Trump has to be careful, right? Because particularly on the abortion stuff, right, is he wants to distance himself from this, but at the same time, he doesn't want to alienate the folks on the right who might support parts of this agenda. And so, but he's been fairly forceful in sort of saying he doesn't like it. Whether that resonates with people, I think, is yet to be seen.
Yeah. As you mentioned, Democrats have been working to link former President Trump pretty closely to Project 2025.
Project 2025 would be the latest attack in Donald Trump's full-on assault on reproductive freedom, because we remember then-President Donald Trump handpicked three members of the United States Supreme Court.
And as Mac mentioned, you know, there have been policy agendas that have been drafted for many years, but Democrats are really focusing on this Project 2025. What is your thought about why they've been doing that and focusing on this so much?
Right. Well, I think there's a couple things that make this kind of unique. First is, Democrats have been framing this election as kind of an existential threat, right? Trump is an existential threat to democracy. And so if he gets elected, there's going to be consequences for the history of the United States. And so tying that directly into, here's what they say they're going to do, provides you with a direct way to make that connection between kind of cause and effect, right? You elect Trump, here's what will happen. The other thing that is part of Project 2025 that is less, I don't want to say less talked about maybe, but is this effort to recruit people to work in a future Trump administration. And I think that is also something that Democrats have talked about to some extent, but is unique in that they want to make sure the conservatives want to make sure to in the next Trump administration that there are people who are competent and are totally dedicated to this agenda that will work from day one to get this enacted. And so you have both the policies that they're being proposed and this recruitment technique where people can literally apply or upload resumes to become part of this. And I think that kind of makes it for a very unique threat.
We're talking about Project 2025 and the impact it could have on the presidential election. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Mac, you mentioned that Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, he wrote the foreword for this book. He's also kind of tried to distance himself a bit from Project 2025.
Project 2025 is not affiliated with the Trump campaign. Kevin Roberts is a friend of mine, but I wouldn't say that he speaks for the president in the same way I wouldn't say that he speaks for me.
Mac, do you think the fact that Senator Vance wrote the foreword to this book for Kevin Roberts, does that complicate the message, or are people making too much hay out of that?
I think one of the things you see in every campaign, right, is an attempt to, as you frame the opposition as extreme, one way to do that is by associating them with people who have positions or past actions that could be framed that way. I think that, I think he didn't write the foreword to the Project 2025 book. He wrote the foreword to another book, which is also about changing Washington in probably a more broad way rather than these sort of very specific policy proposals. I think that the you're going to see this with in terms of events. I mean, you've certainly seen this with the vice presidential candidate on the Democratic side, where they've tried to tie him to controversial figures who have made statements, and it's like, well, you shared a stage with this person, you said nice things about them. Does that mean you're going to pursue their policies? You've been at events with this other group. Harris faced criticism for the Minnesota bail fund. Right. And encouraging people to join that. And then ultimately, bad things happened from some of the people who got bailed out with it. Is she responsible for that as well? So the attempt is to how can we link in the public a person with an event or with a person who they don't like? Mm-hmm. Some of it is that fair? Is it unfair? That's really for the voters to decide. They ultimately have to decide how relevant is this. The Trump administration or the Trump shouldn't say not administration, but Trump campaign now. What they're going to do is point to the Republican platform, right, which has some notable changes in language that are much more moderate, at least when it comes to abortion. They took out the language about the constitutional amendment. The question is, do people believe that the platform speaks for Trump? Do people believe that what Trump says is something to listen to? Or is it more about who they hire and who they listen to? And that's really the question here, is which parts of this will the Trump administration actually prioritize? And you have to decide voters have to decide for themselves where they think that's going to come from.
Mm-hmm. We do have a caller on the line. We have Jack. Hey, Jack, thanks for calling. What is your question or comment?
Hi, thanks for the topic. I'm wondering whether your guests can tell me how Project 2025 compares to the recent Supreme Court Chevron case, whether there's any overlap or intersection.
Interesting. Thanks, Jack. Mm-hmm. Anne, have you been studying that at all?
I haven't read the whole 900 pages, so I will admit that. But part of the conservative agenda as laid out in Project 2025 is to shrink the size of government and to eliminate like the Department of Education, right? There's things that kind of align with that conservative vision that there should be a smaller federal government. And taking power away from the bureaucracy. One of the principles that they talk about is dismantling the administrative state. So in that sense, it very much aligns with, again, this conservative push towards handicapping the bureaucracy.
You want to add anything to that, Mike?
No, and that's, I think, fairly consistent with what you've seen, not just from Heritage, but from, conservative candidates for a long time. This, the idea the administrative state is too big and too powerful, and we're going to be in supportive of finding ways to sort of hamstring the bureaucracy and, from the Republican perspective to, free up free enterprise to do their thing. And from the Democratic perspective, limiting protections on, whether it's health, safety or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll hear about a push in Ohio to make grooming a crime. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Project 2025 and what impact it could have on this year's presidential election. My guests are Xavier University Professor of Political Science, Mac Mariani, and Miami University Assistant Professor of Political Science, Ann Whitesell. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. We were talking before the break about this book that Kevin Roberts wrote, Senator J.D. Vance wrote the foreword to it. To be clear, the book hasn't been published yet. We don't know if anything's going to change before it's published. But the foreword that was obtained in that foreword, Senator Vance writes that it's time to, quote, circle the wagons and load the muskets, end quote, rather than take kind of a laissez-faire approach to government. And what do you make of that? Does that feed back into this discussion we were having sort of about the administrative state?
Yeah, one of the things I think that from that quote that draws people's attentions is the reference to muskets and potential violence. More broadly, I think this idea that the conservative movement needs to come together and work kind of as a team is important in this. That there might be differences among conservatives, but they kind of need to iron out those differences for the sake of the common conservative good, their common vision, and move past the inner squabbles that they have amongst themselves to get these things done.
Mm-hmm. Mac, he also writes that, quote, we should encourage our kids to get married and have kids, end quote, and, quote, discourage them from behaviors that threaten the stability of families, end quote. How do you interpret that as it relates to policies, or do you think it's reasonable to try to figure out the policy implications of a statement like that in the foreword to a book?
Part of it is the broad approach that I think Vance has pushed forward is, that we should find ways to encourage and reward people who build families. And part of that is we do that already through the tax code, right? Unfortunately, my kids have all aged out and I no longer get that tax benefit. But it's, there are subsidies right now for, if you have children. Likewise, if you are receiving government assistance, you get more when you have children. It's sort of a recognition of the fact that that this is an important part of society moving forward. Now, I think the challenge for Vance, right, is that has come across sometimes as being sort of critical or dismissive of folks who choose not to have families, right? And I think that's a pretty sizable group of people, particularly now as people are sort of pushing off marriage and family for sometimes until their late 20s or early 30s versus, you know, when I was younger and people got married in their early 20s. So the fact that there's a large voting block of people who might feel like, oh, I'm not being included in this, is that's the challenge for Vance, is to how do you promote something that is that is essential for society, right? That for us to continue, we got to have kids. And if somebody's got to pay our Social Security as well. So there's some very public benefits that come to that. And at the same time, recognize that people are going to individually make different decisions.
Yeah. We got an email from Wendy. Wendy writes, I would like someone to please address Agenda 47 and its correlation to Project 2025. Agenda 47 is this list of proposals that are planned by former President Trump's campaign should he get reelected. Mac, do you want to tackle that one?
Gosh, I'm just not familiar with that one. I think that one of the things about all of these different agendas that are floating around out there is there's a guy named John Kingdon who wrote about this kind of what he called a multiple streams framework. We think about public policy as being like, oh, there's a problem, and then we come up with a solution, then we move forward with it. And what Kingdon sort of brought to the table is the idea that there's actually different streams. Like there's a problem stream, a politics stream, and a policy stream. And the policy stream is there's all the people are pushing forward different pieces of policy that they want to put forward for multiple reasons, and that they just sort of float out there. And then what happens is policy entrepreneurs try to attach them to problems, and they try to attach them to the politics of the day. I mean, a good example of this is, you know, you think about the post 9/11, we passed all those anti-terrorism laws. Well, you know, the law enforcement had all these policies that they wanted, surveillance policies that we want to do more surveillance. And they what they did was they attached those to the new problem, terrorism, right? And the politics worked out really well. And as a result, the police got much more broad surveillance powers, which they used not primarily to fight terrorism, but to fight drugs. And the idea that there's, you know, there are ideas floating around out there. Now, is this a list of policies that Trump has announced? I'm just not familiar with the particular Project 47, but it's, there are lots of different policies out there floating around, and the hope for the people who put them forward is that they can somehow match the policy to the moment.
Mm. And my understanding is that Agenda 47 has, you know, some of these ideas like close the borders, have the largest deportation ever, stop what former President Trump refers to as the migrant crime epidemic. I don't know if you've looked at Agenda 47, Anne, but do you see a correlation there to Project 2025?
Yeah, I haven't looked at it specifically, but I mean, if we look at the Trump campaign's policies that they propose, you do see echoes of it in Project 2025. So that wouldn't surprise me that there's many of the same kind of goals. And you see many of the people who are writing for Project 2025 have been involved, you know, either in the prior Trump administration or are in like that kind of circle. So it's not surprising that these ideas, are similar. And you know, as Max said, like there's always these ideas going around. We would actually be in a really bad spot if we had an administration come in and they didn't have any policy ideas. So if this idea that, you know, think tanks or other individuals, you know, with policy goals are kind of conniving their way into power and then suggesting policies, like that always happens, and we need it to happen because if we want things to get solved, then we need policy alternatives for it. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me that there's some overlap there.
I want to talk about something else that's been in the news. There was hidden camera video obtained by CNN, and in that video, former Trump administration official Russell Vogt told undercover climate activists that the former president's move to distance himself from Project 2025 was graduate-level politics.
He's been at our organization. He's raised money for our organization. He's blessed it from the, you know, I remember walking into our last day in office and told him what I was going to do. So he's very supportive of what we do.
Mac, you kind of talked before about walking that line between appealing to the base and also making sure you're appealing to moderates who might be on the margins there. And what do you make of that, that idea that this is kind of graduate level politics?
I mean, I think it's right. When you're competing in a two-party system, you're trying to just win more votes than the other person, right? There's no proportional representation when it comes to the presidency. And so Trump needs to get more votes than now it's Harris. And so if that means he needs to distance himself from some of these more radical or unpopular ideas in Project 2025, then that's what he's going to do. I think, again, it's difficult for him to do that because there's a lot of overlap in the policy ideas and in a lot of the people that have worked on these ideas. But it doesn't surprise me that he would not want to necessarily put his name on some of the things that don't pull particularly well.
Yeah. Did you want to add to that, Mac?
I'd add that, when you think about ultimately, some of these ideas that have been kind of floating around for a while, like eliminating the Department of Education. Republicans have literally been talking about that since the Department of Education was created in the late 70s, right? So, I mean, this was part of Reagan's, Reagan wanted to get rid of the Department of Education. Lots of Republican candidates have talked about it. But the ability to do that, right, the protection from the parts of this plan or any plan that's kind of floating around out there for politicians to pick up on is the checks and balances, right? The fact that this has to go passed by the House, it has to be passed by the Senate, it has to go to, the president ultimately has to decide to sign it, and then it's in his political interest to do so. And then you also add in the courts and as well as the states and other things like that that are pushing back in terms of federalism. I think the real danger, right, and this is something I think what I find interesting is that both parties are sort of view the other side as very extreme. The real danger is the imperial presidency, right? If you give a president the ability to do all these things on their own independently using, a phone and a pen, all of a sudden the checks that the system builds in, there's not a political will to get rid of the Department of Education. Most Congress people, Republicans included, don't want to have to go face the voters and say, I don't care about education. So the result is now whether or not that's a good idea or a bad idea, that's a different question. But I think the fact that there's a political sort of check on that is a good thing. Now, if presidents have the ability to increase their power in ways that allow them to gut agencies or to I think probably the biggest danger in this and the biggest risk is the increasing the power of the president over the bureaucracy also creates opportunities for presidents to ignore those checks and balances. And I think the fact that both parties are sort of unwilling, both parties want the presidency because they see it as we can get all these things done independent of those checks. And there should be, I think, a wider recognition that someday your opponent is going to control those, those levers of power. And maybe we ought to come to sort of a universal agreement that's not good for one person to have that much power. And it's kind of like I compare it to the ring in Lord of the Rings, right? Everybody wants to, nobody should have this. But when you get it, you want to use it. And you're like, oh, wait, I could be trusted with this power. And I think that's the big temptation in American politics. And unfortunately, I think it leaves us vulnerable to more extreme policies and also the sort of instability that comes with changing administrations, right? Where one president can sign a whole bunch of things without any checks, and then the next president can come in and reverse them and do their own things. We ought to have a more serious conversation about how much power the president should have.
Well, and I think a lot of people are pointing to one of the proposals in Project 2025 that kind of looks at that, which is this idea of being able to easily replace these long-term government employees who have, up to this point, these civil service protections with political appointees. And what do you think are the implications of that? Is that kind of this potential imperial presidency that Mac was talking about?
Oh, yeah, it's a huge potential problem because especially if we look at the first Trump administration, we heard a lot of stories in the media about how kind of Trump's worst impulses were tamed or were, tamed by either political appointees who disagreed with some of the things that Trump did, or by people within the bureaucracy who weren't going to let these things happen. And so if you replace all these career civil servants with political appointees, presumably you're going to replace them with people who are just going to like rubber stamp anything that, you know, President Trump would want. And so, yeah, you get to this point where, you know, anything the president says then quickly becomes, you know, the policy enacted by the bureaucracy, because there's no friction happening between the career civil servants and the political appointees. It's become one and the same.
Well, I've been talking with Xavier University Professor of Political Science, Mac Mariani, and Miami University Assistant Professor of Political Science, Anne Whitesell. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Lucy.
Up next, we'll hear about a push in Ohio to make grooming a crime. This is Cincinnati Edition.